But Whitman published the book. He's a medical doctor, and it's on medicine. But this portion in here deals. He came to Mexico. He was a couple days in Mexico, and I gave him the idea or this portion of it here, and where is it? And a small picture which I had. Here's the picture. But only this portion of his book deals with me. The rest of it is on the subject there of the whole book. It's in German, and they have it over in the library. I gave it to the library here, the German book. Now, here, you don't have your tape running now.
Oh, yeah, I do, but that's okay.
Here's another one that's written in Dutch. This is the second company. When I left Syntex, I started another company called Botanica Max, and at the I had so much trouble there with the other people from Syntex that some people in Mexico said they would take it over, but they would change the name of it to Hormasan. And then Smith, Klein, and French bought. After I left in '49, Smith, Klein, and French bought Hormasan from them, and they changed the name to Diosan. Then Organon bought Diosan from Smith, Klein, and French, and they're one of the producers at the present time of hormones in Mexico.
So and Organon was one of the European cartel that...
Yeah, it's one of the Europeans, yes.
But your work had helped to break the cartel.
Yes,
to
see, here's a picture, and there's a picture. And this is published in Dutch, but Task said that he was going to publish it in book form later on with the whole hormone industry.
Yeah, that's very good. I hope maybe later I can get some copies of those so I can
all right.
Those to the file. You were just starting to talk about the work that you did with pregnenolone and some of the other early syntheses. There were good glass blowers here. You had said that. But presumably you didn't have the kind of help you had at the Rockefeller, where you had a group of assistants who would do this.
I looked up. You see, I would generally get boys that were working on their doctor's degree,
mm-hmm.
and occasionally I would get someone that had the doctor's degree of Whitmore's men and use them for they wanted to experience additional experience on the. Type of work that I was doing, and occasionally Whitmore would come to me and tell me that he had a man that wants an extra year of work with you, so that there was 32 or 33 different ones that I worked with in the time that I was here, and only one of those that was not working on the doctor. I had several come in here and worked on the doctor's degree full time. On the doctor's degree, one was Turner. Turner was caught in the war. Turner was working with Bunnant. He was a Canadian, and the war started, and being Canadian, he couldn't. You see, that was before we got into the war, so he came down here, and. I saw him back of me in the laboratory. He said, "I'm working for you." And so he told me then later on who he was working for over there, mm-hmm. and in Europe. And he got his doctor's degree with me. Mm-hmm. And he went down. He went to Philadelphia to work then. But there's only one outsider that already had his doctor's degree that I wanted to come here, and he. You see, on these hormones, there's two classes of two different groups of hormones that can be made from these materials. Syntex has written up an article in a publication which they just which they make available only to workers of Syntax. But they sent me a copy of it for some reason or other, and I just got that this week. And one of them is a progesterone type, and the cortisone type would come under the progesterone because they have the same number of carbon atoms in both of them. Now, Upjohn, when I was about ready to leave go into retirement, Upjohn wanted me to come to see them about. They had the idea that they wanted to use prednisone alone as a starting material for the products that they would be interested in. They were getting the enzymes out of the adrenal glands, mm-hmm. and oxidizing with the enzyme to put on in the 12 position. Mm-hmm. Then the other type of compound was the male and the female hormone. Now the male hormone, there's two of them. There's androsterone and there's testosterone. Of the and that has two less carbon atoms in it. And the female hormone is the same. The female has a benzene ring. The first ring is a benzene ring. Mm-hmm. And estrone and estradiol are the two female hormones which they get. And both of those have two less carbon atoms than the progesterone. So I was interested in a fellow named Kruger was working at Virginia on the Beckman rearrangement. And I was interested in applying the Beckman rearrangement to a product that we were getting from... I had him to come here and work on a product that we were getting from sarsaparilla root. But because it didn't have the extra double bond in to interfere with it. But he was able to knock that off by the Beckman rearrangement down to what the water, and at the present day they're still using the same process, and I applied it then to the Dallas
Channel.
That was that was in about 39 or somewhere around there, yeah, yes, it would be 39.
Well, when that's one of the sorts of things that I had in mind when I was asking about techniques we're using, applying the Beckman rearrangement, for instance.
No. They're using. I talked to Flores as vice president and in charge of Cyril's work in Mexico. And by the way, Monsanto has taken over Cyril, and. The man from Syntex in Germany, he was here. He comes. He's been here a few times. He told me that Cyril has discontinued production. They were one of the big producers in Mexico. He said that they and SIBA have both discontinued, and they've decided to buy the hormones from the ones that are producing. You see, they're all very friendly on making of the hormone. One will make one product, another will make another product, and so on like that. And then if the one needs a product that the other is making, why they'll exchange products. And they've been doing that for years. All of the processes which they're using in Mexico at the present time, Dr. Flores told me this, he said they're using essentially the processes which I took to Mexico. Yeah. And when I went to Mexico, there were no chemists in Mexico, and there was no equipment. I spent almost a year getting the equipment and the chemicals that we needed. That is, before we got started with Syntex. I was here at that time.
You had to Did you send them down from Penn State to Mexico? Or?
No. I would tell them what to order, and they ordered it.
I can imagine that was a problem in the early days.
So I went to Mexico quite often in those days because I was working on a lot of plants that grew in Mexico. Right. And one of the things that I was working on in Mexico, after working on the various sapaginins, I wanted to get all of the Dioscorea, the different Dioscoreas that I could find in Mexico. Even though I could get only a small amount of some of them, and some of them would have practically nothing in, I got I think 20 some Dioscoreas that are collected in various parts of Mexico, and one of them was called Barbasco root by the natives. That's the one that's used at the present time, and that had almost pure diosgenin that I would get from that, in contrast with the Cabeza Negro, which had quite a lot of other products there. But I couldn't use that because I found it at a place called Tierra Blanca, and the only way that you could get the product out of there during the war was to put it on a boat and take it over to Veracruz and then bring it in from Veracruz. Hmm. And I didn't want to do that, so I started on Cabeza Negro when I first went to Mexico. Then when I broke off with Syntex and went on my own on Botanica Max, I started immediately on this Barbasco root.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to get back into some of that and ask you about your research both at Syntex and after with Botanica Max. But I still had a couple of questions about the early years at Penn State. One thing was, how did the other organic chemists in the U.S. who were working on steroids react to, for instance, when you came up with the right structure for the side chain sarsaparilla, wasn't it?
It was on sarsaparilla, from sarsaparilla root.
How do people react? Do you have contact with Fieser and the others?
Yes. Fieser, up until that time, was refereeing all of my papers that I sent in. And, I think I had 40 or something like that on steroids. And Arthur Lamb, who was editor of the Journal of Chemical Education, he was at Harvard also. And I sent this paper in with Rohrman. On showing that Fieser was wrong, on agreeing with the Germans that the side chain was inert, because in this paper we pointed out that there were so many typical reactions, especially that you could use acetic anhydride at 200 degrees. But no one ever thought of using it at 200 degrees until we did one day and over there, and it worked. It opened up the side chain. And that all of the reactions that we had couldn't be explained on except for this formula. And so Lamb got in touch with me, and he said, "Can you come over to Harvard?" So I went over. And Fieser and Mary, his wife, They both invited me to dinner in the night. Well, Fieser thought that I was going to agree to with him that this formula was wrong, that we were proposing. But Fieser got so mad during the day that he let his wife take me to dinner, and he wouldn't show up.
Oh,
really? Uh-huh. But Lamb published it. Lamb told me that he didn't know anything about it, but he said that if I was so convinced that I was correct, he would publish it. And he published it. And I didn't go to this meeting. There was a meeting in Richmond, an organic symposium, and Fieser gave a paper on the sapaginin. And he gave his formula. And he said, "Others disagree with me." I was told that.
That was just
about the time the paper was being published.
Well, it'd be interesting to look up Caesar's paper on the
I know his book is not very complimentary to me.
Well, you know,
he said sometimes I go to work and no one knows whether I'm coming back the next day.
Well, finally in the later editions of his book on the steroids, they certainly did talk about that piece of work that you and Norman had done, and
mm-hmm.
obviously they had to accept the structure finally. So was that the only contact you had with Caesar?
That was the only time that I saw Caesar.
Yeah. That was what became known as the marker degradation. Using acetic anhydride
and they tell me that they're still using that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're using an awful lot. I was surprised. When I went to Mexico, and I asked several whether I even went to Syntex, where they're producing down at Cuernavaca, and I mean they're just producing then sending the product to the United States or wherever they want to send it then. Indications are that they were collecting between 75,000 tons of root a year, and that's all brought out of the jungles with these natives on their back. Some of it is dried in the little villages, dried and they chop it up, you see, and dried in the sun. There, others is dried at the coffee drying places and things like that. But now at the present time, starting back about 1974, the Mexican government has taken over the collection of all root in Mexico. They won't let these various companies collect their own root anymore. And then they'll sell it to these companies, what they want. But Flores told me, and everyone told me there, they indicated that there was between 75,000 tons and 80,000 tons of raw root a year that was brought out by the natives. And that was 12 years ago.
Yeah,
so I don't know what's brought out at the present time.
That's a remarkable one.
They tried to put it under cultivation, but they would have to let it grow for at least 4 years.
Yeah, that creates problems, doesn't it?
These roots, they get the Barbasco. They showed me some of the Barbasco. They're huge roots. And they get rings in them, just like a tree stump, so you can count the number of years. You know, and they've told me that some of them are as much as 250 to 300 years, and they will weigh as much as 250 kilos, something like that.
Speaking of Barbasco root and the others, I wanted to go back to the mid-30s again and ask you how you got on to Dioscorias and all the various other plant species that you began looking at. Did botanists come to you with the idea that you might be able to look for those?
No.
Or did you just have the idea yourself that...
You see, I never had a course in botany in my life in school. So I went over to the botany department someplace. Oh, gosh, I forget what his name was. Anyway, the botanist, the head of the botany department came out, and he had a talk with me. And he said, you're the fellow that's going around collecting all of these roots. He said, we're botanists here. Why don't you let us do it? And so that's the last that I had to do with with him. I told him that I was well satisfied with what I was collecting. But anyway, I got some material from Japan. They published, some Japanese published a paper on what they thought might be a saponin that had a double bond in it. And they called it diosgenin. So they sent me a small sample of it, very crude material. I purified the stuff up, and I worked it up to progesterone from that. So then I thought that was going to be a material that would be commercially of interest. So I decided that I'd better try to find a source of it. Pennington Company in New York sell various products to be extracted for drugs and things of that nature. And they had one of the products in there. Besides, they had Smilax and a few other things in there, which would give the sarsaparilla type of compound. But they had one of the products in there that they had available was Bethroot, but they only had a small amount of that. I got that, and sure enough, that had diosgenin in, and very good product I got out of that. I found out where they got the product. They got it from North Carolina. I went to North Carolina, and the roots are only about the size of your thumb. And if you collected say 100 pounds in a year's time, that may you may have the limit there of what you could get. So I decided that wasn't the thing. So I went to California, Texas, Arizona, various other places looking for plant material, and I was looking for Dioscorea. I generally had graduate students going with me, or retired botanists. In Texas, I went to Texas A&M College, and they told me that there were two retired botanists. They lived at different places, apart from each other. One was interested in bees, another, I forget what he was interested in. Well, I called them on the phone, and one lived on one side of San Antonio, and one on the other side. And so I picked up the one that lived nearest to San Antonio, and he knew quite well the other one, and so he furnished the truck. And while I was sitting there in the evening, he invited us to stay overnight at his home. While we were sitting there, he had an old botany book, and I looked up Dioscorea in the botany book, and they had a picture of a big one. They said that it grew in Mexico. It grew between Orizaba and Cordoba along a stream of water. So I thought that would be the ideal thing. That was exactly what I was looking for.
Because it was large enough that you didn't have to collect.
Yeah, it was big. And it said that it grows the size of it. It gets to be several hundred pounds. So I called up Whitmore and told Whitmore that I thought I had found the thing I was looking for, and it grows in Mexico. He said, "Oh, well, the war is about ready to start." He said, "You don't want to go to Mexico." I said, "Yes, but I don't have enough money. That's the reason I called you, to get a little more money." And he sent me the money down. So we collected plants in Texas. When we finished collecting in Texas, I went to Mexico. And I was pretty smart and cocky at that time. Going to Mexico, I asked there were no Americans on the train going to Mexico, because they, no one knew whether we were going to get into the war or not, and no one knew whether Mexico would be in on our side or not. And so the embassy and everyone was advising all Americans to stay out of Mexico at that time. Well, I asked the head porter on the train where a hotel near the Zocalo was, because the Zocalo I thought would be the ideal place. Well, he told me he gave me the name of a hotel, which I later found out from the American embassy that all of the German spies were staying. Well, I took a room there. It was a very nice hotel. I forget what the name of the hotel is now. I've been there many times.
Was that the Hotel Geneve?
No, it's not the Geneve. The embassy was right beside the Geneve, and the embassy told me the next time I come to Mexico to stay at the Geneve. From then on, because they said the majority of their war workers were, they had a lot of war workers there. And they had roughly 400 rooms at the Geneve, and about half of those were taken by workers of that were working with the embassy. Mm-hmm. Well, I went over to the palace, and I didn't know who to go to. I went to the president's office, the president of Mexico. I had no letter to her. And so I was able to get into an inner office, and someone spoke English there. And they told me that you have to take a matter like this through the embassy. Mm-hmm. So I went to the American embassy. Yeah. They told me where the American embassy was, and so I took a taxi up to the American embassy. American embassy told me that I would have to have permits to collect plants in Mexico to get them out, even for research, and said that that they were getting out of Mexico everyone that that didn't have business in Mexico at that time, because they didn't know how things were going to be. They said one thing that you can do, you can get inoculated for typhoid, because you'd be going down to a typhoid country if you go down there. And they said, come back in January. Said, we'll try to have the collecting permits, and we'll try to have someone to go with you, a botanist. I went down in January.
January of which year? 1940?
That would have been... when did we get into the war? 41.
January 41?
January 42 is what it is.
Oh, right after Pearl Harbor.
Yes, it was after Pearl Harbor. See, Pearl Harbor came. I went on collecting plants, then I went back to Arizona, and I went to California, and I happened to be on the train going from California to, or from Los Angeles to San Francisco, when it was announced over the loudspeaker that we were in war with Japan. But I went down in January, and the embassy hadn't done anything. They didn't expect me to come back. So they finally got a man who was a botanist with the university, with one of the universities in Mexico, and they thought that I would need a truck, because I told them that I wanted to collect some other plants. Well, we got a truck, and I assumed that the botanist was going to go with us on the truck. There would be three of us on the truck. Well, I was staying at the Geneve Hotel, and the botanist came on a Monday, and he had his girlfriend, He had his girlfriend's mother, and he said that he couldn't speak English, so he had someone that could speak a little English.